Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Moorhead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome to Health Matters. I am your host and radio health evangelist, Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the We Apologize If Anyone Was Offended show. We ourselves are becoming political candidates. We are learning the lingo. We are in the process of learning how to appeal to masses, and so we are practicing our apologies now. So,
would you please not speak for me?
Our sincere apologies if anyone was offended, of course. Thanks to our listeners at True Talk Internet Radio, our guest, and now a recurring contributor to the show, from the University of Kentucky, the Department of Physician Assistant Studies, Assistant Professor Shelley Irving. Welcome, Shelley.
Good to be here.
And unfortunately, due to yet another lapse in security, our co-medical host, the Manager of Communications Infrastructure at the University of Kentucky, is here to explain our web presence, Rick Phillips. Hey, Rick.
Hey, Tony. You know you can get the audio of the show at wmky.org. That's right. You can get the audio of the shows there. That's Moorhead State Public Radio's website. There you'll find a list of all the most recent shows. There's a summary there. Tony does put forth some energy towards helping you understand which is the show you want to listen to. But right there at the bottom of that summary, you'll find a link to the audio of the show. On down the next link, you'll see there is a podcast. If you know what a podcast is, then you know what to do. After that, interact with us on Facebook, facebook.com/HMRadioShow. Yep, that's it. That's how you get to us. Ask questions, leave feedback, give us show topics. Tell us pretty much, well, we would just assume, let's don't talk about the election, unless it's healthcare related towards the election. But, well, okay, if you want to, that's fine. But again, facebook.com/HMRadioShow.
Our sponsor for today's show, the copays for expensive medicines. It's wrong for your health care costs and wrong for America. See how we're building up to the election. Wrong for America. And let me explain what I'm talking about. This has been a long-term thing, but the pharmaceutical companies have gotten very good at this. What they do is they say, look, we will pay your copay for your expensive $100,000 a year medicine. The copay is the small fish that they use to get the big fish. If they can pay your copay and convince you to use their medicine, then they get access to your insurance dollars, and in fact, all of our insurance dollars, and those help pay for their medication, and they make costs go up for everybody. So they have devised a strategy to relieve you of any costs that you might have personally so they can access those health care dollars. This came from Wall Street Journal, October 11th. Employers shift higher health care costs onto workers. Again, open enrollment for 2017 starts November 1st. December 15th is the last day to enroll or change your plans to start January 1st of 2017. January 1st of 2017, obviously that's when the coverage starts if you are enrolled. And January 31st, last day to enroll or change a 2017 health care plan. This is the first time in history, Rick and Shelley, more than half of workers, 51% of workers, have a deductible more than $1,000 for a plan covering a single person. So if you buy a single person plan, over half of you are going to have to pay the first $1,000 of your health care. First time in history. This is Bettina Dines, Vice President of Human Resources, the Society of Human Resource Management. She says, long gone are the days when you thought your insurance, even if you were paying high premiums, was going to cover you very well. Even if you select the best plans your company offers, you are still going to pay out of pocket. In 2016, 83% of workers had a deductible plan covering a single person. On single coverage plan, they have an average deductible of $1,478. That's up 49% since 2011. Now you say, why are these deductibles going up? And we also know that despite the fact that the deductibles are going up, the insurance plans are actually getting out of the Affordable Care Act in large numbers. Well, again, according to the Wall Street Journal, they said spending on pharmaceuticals is driving much of the cost increase. Prescription drug costs are expected to rise 7% in 2017. Specialty drugs are going up 16.8%. So to make up for these exorbitant pharmaceutical costs, the insurance companies find themselves having to raise the amount of money that they charge you to try to get you to ratchet down your usage. So again, we are all suffering. We are all paying extra. We are all getting increased deductibles and also increased premiums because of the rapid rise in our pharmaceutical costs. And they are trying, the pharmaceutical companies are trying to push this and get around some of the limits that are placed on them, meager as they are, with the insurance copays. And we will explain that in our next fractional portion. That is our sponsor, Copays for Expensive Medicine Costs, Wrong for Your Healthcare Costs, Wrong for America. This is one of the biggest drivers right now of the increase in the deductibles and also in the premium increase in the Affordable Care Act. One of the reasons why insurance companies are abandoning the Affordable Care Act in drove. One of the reasons why, in fact, the Affordable Care Act is not a sustainable solution to our health care costs. Sorry to break the news. Again, this is a fall when we apologize if anyone was offended by that.
Do we really?
Well, I mean, what do you say? This is just bad news all the way around. But that is our sponsor. We'll get back to it in our second fractional portion. Rick, we have, first of all, I want to give you an opportunity. I know you, many of our regular healthcare listeners realize that Rick has been away for a while. Many times I have sent Rick to timeout, but this has been two shows since you've been on, and you have been busy.
Very.
First of all, you went to Splunkfest 2017?
Correct. No, it was 2016, but 2016? That's okay. I'm hoping to go to 2017 next year.
Okay. Rick was tweeting me about Splunk, and honestly, Rick, I
promise you that tweet wasn't just for you.
I know, but just right over my head. Rick is excited about Splunk. I had to look up what Splunk was. I still don't understand it, but I'm sure it was a great thing. In Orlando, this was Splunk Fest.
I did take a side trip. And, you know, it's been a while since it actually happened maybe 3 weeks ago. So by the time the listeners hear this, it'll have been close to 3 weeks. But I got to meet Larry the engineer, right? So Larry is, we had a kind of a little bit of time together. We went and looked at the Space Center over there at Cape Canaveral. Had a great day. Larry, thank you so much. I appreciate your hospitality. That will be a day that will be remembered for a while. That was a pretty impressive day.
Remember that. Health matters can get creepy with you if that's what you want. Just hit our Facebook page. Talk to us.
Tony, you got the next one. Right? You get the next one.
But I think most people would agree that Rick is not fit, temperamentally fit, to be a radio co-host. Him being on this show is, in fact, dangerous for America.
Dangerous for this region. We're not quite as big as you think we are.
On the internet, we can cause havoc anywhere in the world.
Well, it's funny you say that, because the last show I missed had nothing to do with Larry the Engineer or my travels. I got pinned down with a very interesting problem, and we had a big, huge outage in Kentucky last week, if most people didn't read the newspapers, right?
Somebody saw it into a fiber optic
cable.
We
did have a fiber optic strand, or it's actually not just a single pair or single pair of fiber, but actually an entire, like, 144 strand bundle developed a hole. Or a slice, or a cut, or you name it. But nonetheless, the light doesn't go through that when it is exposed to the air like that. Nonetheless, caused a huge outage. So I apologize for not being able to make the last show, but
sure.
we were knee deep in it.
If you're a manager of communications infrastructure, and suddenly
there is no communications infrastructure,
the internet goes dark. All of a sudden, the radio show is
dark.
Your problem. Now, I want to ask you about that.
Because, we did not go dark.
Right. The cable was cut, and yet the thing that everybody talked about at UK was that it was slow.
Right, because we have four cables.
Okay.
So the biggest cable got cut, right? And so we relied on the other cables. They just couldn't handle the volume of traffic because everybody was going to the internet to check to see how the cable was doing.
Okay. So this is what is happening. Please use the internet lightly today.
Don't email me your question. In this case, call me.
Yeah. Okay. Just curious about it. Moving on, our Health Matters. Heroes of today's youth. That right. We have a Health Matters hottie, and our Health Matters hottie is
you.
Purdue Chicken.
Oh, no. It's not you?
No, it's Purdue Chicken.
It's a different chicken.
Purdue Chicken. Okay, so all right, you're in rare form. You've had a couple weeks to practice. That's great, Rick. Good for you. This came from one of my news services. Purdue has announced that they will no longer mix animal-only antibiotics into feed for their chickens. This is 2 years after they became the first major U.S. poultry producer to stop routinely using medical antibiotics, and now they decide they will not use any. Now, if a chicken gets sick, they will feed those with antibiotics, but 95% of produced chickens, when they make this final move, 95% of their chickens will be antibiotic-free. The chickens treated with antibiotics will be sold under separate labels. So Purdue is well on their way to producing antibiotic-free chickens. Tyson Foods is eliminating the medically important antibiotics by September 2017. So they are behind Purdue right now. Purdue is really leading the way. And this is important because we have a real problem with antibiotic resistance in the United States. 70% of the antibiotics sold in the U.S. are, in fact, put in animal feed. And so the resistance, obviously, is being fueled by this widespread use in animal. It gets into the animal's feces. It gets washed into waterways. We have resistant germs all up and down the chain, and the majority of the problem comes from these animal feeds. And Purdue has finally committed themselves to not using antibiotic-fed chickens. Also, I will tell you, McDonald's, Chick-fil-A are working with chicken suppliers to curtail antibiotic use as well. This has been a big push on a national level to try to get our antibiotic resistance under control. And Purdue, I think, deserves our Health Matters Hottie, Hero of Today's Youth Award for that. What do you think?
If you say they're hottie, then I agree with you because you're always right.
Okay. So,
You're just going to let that one go? Come on.
You know, honestly, I don't even know how to relate to you, okay, because you've been gone, and then you insult me, and then you say something nice, and I don't even know where you are. I don't even know you.
And I always say something nice. How is this any different than any other show? Other than me being here for the last
year. Shelly.
That's how it's different right there. You replaced me.
Okay. I'm just saying, I have options over here. You know that. No, it is kind of exciting.
You forgot finally, you rode with me.
Yeah, finally to see, thank you, finally to see somebody doing something about antibiotic resistance. And a manufacturer as large as Purdue, I mean, this to me would influence my buying choices, the fact that because they can make bigger chickens cheaper if they keep stuffing them with antibiotics. There's no doubt about it. They appear to improve growth. But the fact that they have decided to curtail the use, that's a pretty exciting thing. So I'm excited about it. I would encourage our radio fans, and I mean, nobody's perfect with this. These are feedlot chickens. They're not free range. You can have a range of moral reactions to this, but in my mind, this is, in fact, a good thing.
I'm good. I mean, my new diet, I eat a lot of chicken, so this is good news for me, Tony.
Yeah. Well,
this is wonderful news.
So I go with the Purdue. Again, Tyson, we'll give them a year to catch up, and then let me ask you, just Shelly, just to shut Rick up, you are, I assume, an eater of chicken.
Yes.
Okay. And if you had a choice and someone had done antibiotic-free chicken?
I do purchase antibiotic-free chicken.
All right.
Meat in general.
And meat in general. Thank you very much. Meanwhile, let's take a break, let you contemplate the fact that we didn't really tell you anything worthwhile in our first fractional portion. Come back and let us try again. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the second fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. This is the We Apologize If Anyone Was Offended show. It's our salute to the ongoing entertainment provided by the American presidential race. With us also, in addition to Rick, from the University of Kentucky Physician Assistant Studies Program, Assistant Professor Shelly Irving. Hey, Shelly.
Hey, good to be here. I apologize if anybody's offended by my presence.
Yes. There's a woman on the show. I don't know. Our sponsor for the second time is Copays for Expensive Medicines, Wrong for Healthcare Costs, Wrong for America. Now, we talked about last time, the Wall Street Journal, October 11th, said that spending on pharmaceuticals is driving much of the cost increase in these high deductible health care plans. They are now 51% of single plans offered on the insurance exchanges now have a deductible of more than $1,000. Average on those is $1,478. Now, this was an editorial. This was in the Annals of Internal Medicine, again on October 11th. And they said, look, when you get copay assistance for expensive drugs from the pharmaceutical companies, it really throws a lot of things off. Now, here's what they do. As they said, look, we know this medicine is very expensive. We know it has a high copay, but we will pay the copay because they frankly don't want your money. They want access to your insurance money, which is where the big bucks are. So first of all, they mentioned copay assistance. These coupons, these cash rebates that they give to assist you with your copay diminishes price pressure. That is, you know, if the medicine is essentially free to you, once again, it gets dumped onto your insurance, dumped onto the rest of us. You personally don't have any stake in this, so you're willing to go for a higher price medicine because why not? It undermines benefit designs. An insurance company designs their insurance to match a certain set of premiums, and they set the copays up so that they can modify your use of the insurance. And I'm sorry, but that's the way they do it. They said, look, we figure if this costs $500, people are not going to use it nearly as much as if it costs $250. And that works for them. They've done the math on it. They know how much they need in terms of premiums in order to make that work. If, in fact, someone pays the $500 so that it costs zero, you're going to use that service a lot more. You're going to bust the insurance company, basically. And the other thing that they mentioned is the insurers then can no longer use leverage to try to keep prices down. For instance, they have something called tiered drugs, and they will provide free some of the lower tiers. As you get higher, the copays go up. Again, if the pharmaceutical company provides you with a copay, you don't care whether it's a tier one drug or a tier three drug. You're perfectly happy because they all cost the same. That means the insurance company is no longer able to bargain with the pharmaceutical company to get their drug to a lower tier. The pharmaceutical company doesn't care. They're dangling out a few dollars, and they're getting back many times their investment from your insurance. So again, what they are doing is simply using their dollars as a small fish to capture the big fish, which is access to your insurance dollars, access to all of our collective insurance dollars. They are driving our insurance rates up. And it appears, because of the way we've set it up and also because of the inactivity of Congress, there is absolutely nothing we can do about it at this point. That is our sponsor again, and you can see I'm ranting. Rick, I apologize for that. Shelley,
Do that all the time?
Yeah, but this one's a big one because this is really wrecking the Affordable Care Act. I mean, there are a lot of things that are going to make it unsustainable. There are a lot of things that are wrong with the Affordable Care Act, but this one right here single-handedly will derail all of our collective insurance. Next up, this was Psychological Science in the Public Interest, October 20, 2016 issue. Lead author Daniel Simons, he's a professor in the Department of Psychology at Beckman Institute at the University of Illinois. And he looked at these computerized brain training games. Now, let's go back on those. You know, it had this Einstein game and these genius games, and you train your brain, and that's going to prevent you from getting Alzheimer's disease, and you're going to be so much smarter when you're old because you did their game. And they would sell these things for some exorbitant prices. In 2014, an international group of more than 70 scientists said, look, there is no proof that these, scientific proof, that these improve your cognitive function or they stave off cognitive decline. Well, several months later, there was a group of 133 scientists said there is a substantial and growing body of evidence that demonstrates benefits of brain training for a wide variety of everyday activities. So we've got ourselves now into a Clinton-Trump situation where we have scientists lined up on both sides, each claiming to know the facts regarding these brain training games.
So the facts are actually different on both sides. Well, because then they wouldn't be facts, would they?
You know, that is a very interesting observation. And you know yourself, if two people look at a situation, a model, a picture, or whatever, they're going to come away with different impressions.
Isn't it either salt or pepper?
Well, you can say that, but
it's on or off. It's
but if you say it's more important, it works or it doesn't work, then you start to get into trouble because how do you define those things? And for a lot of things, they sort of worked. But some people said they didn't work, and some people said they did work, and they work for some people, they don't work for others. So you can't, that's the problem.
Is this a little brain game? Will it help us?
No.
Now, I think it will.
I know you do, but I'm siding with the 70, the initial band of 70, over the band of 133. Now, what Simons did, and this won't settle it because people are going to keep, there's money to be made.
It will.
It will not.
It will.
I know you think that, but the fact is it will not. Honestly, Rick.
The fact is you don't have all the facts.
Let's be honest, Rick.
The fact is you don't know everything about this.
I have an article. That's where we are. So Simons, what they did was they reviewed 132 journal articles about brain training games. They do improve performance on the train task. If you try to juggle, you will learn how to juggle. However, juggling will not help you ride a bicycle. There is no cross training on that. In the same way, if you learn to do a math game, a card game, a word association game, that's great, but it will not help you in your thinking with other tasks. Many of the published intervention studies have major shortcomings in design or analysis. And you can always say that. Well, this is junk science. It's not good. But they didn't use control groups. Some of them, they just had people that sat around. Some of them, they had same tests. But they didn't. Some gave them alternate tasks, but they didn't really have a group that you could say was a control group. They said, based on our comprehensive review, these brain training games, there's no evidence that they transfer brain training from the game to something else. So that's the thing. If you want to learn how to play cards, you can play a card game over and over again, and you'll get really good at it. That will not help you, unfortunately, to be able to think, to communicate with your kids or anything else. Do you have any of these Einstein stuff for your kids, the tapes or anything like that?
No.
Okay. You work with them. You talk to them.
Right. She experience.
Yeah.
Experience.
She is a mom. And I know you work also with older people. I am advising them to remain physically active, be open to new things, mm-hmm. But I'm not advising them to buy any proprietary brain training product.
Nope.
Okay.
Mm-mm. We tell them to collar sometimes in coloring books. I don't think there's any scientific basis for that, but it gives them something to do.
You know, and my daughter is coloring in a coloring book to manage stress while she's in medical school. This is just sort of everybody now. Apparently, coloring books are the big deal. I don't think they will make you smarter. Rick, you cannot color your way into knowing what you're doing.
Nor will I try.
Thank you.
I had a physiology coloring book, and I learned a few things from that.
Yeah.
Does that count?
Well, I did an anatomy coloring book when I was in medical school. Honestly, I didn't learn a thing. But it was a great way to kill time. It's, you know, it's to act like you were learning something. I didn't think so. All right, next up, and let's just keep this on the electronic stuff here. This is AMA, Journal of Internal Medicine. A guy named Atif Mehrotra, professor of healthcare policy and medicine at Harvard Medical School. And he looked at these online symptom checkers. You know, if you have some symptoms, you put them into one of these things, and it tells you that you've got some rare genetic disease that only occurs in Southeast Asia or something like that. And so they looked at the online symptom checkers, and then they compared those to actual doctors. They had 45 cases. They used 234 physicians against 23 of the proprietary symptom checkers that you can access online. They were one paragraph long scenarios. 15 of them were high acuity. That is, this is an emergency condition. You need to do something right now or something bad's going to happen. 15 medium acuity, 15 low acuity. You should probably get that looked at some point. 26 were common, 19 were uncommon of these scenarios. And they first went to the symptom checkers to find out how often they came up with an accurate diagnosis when you entered the symptoms in to the software. Then, now here's where it gets a little sticky. They gave those same 45 cases to what's called the Human Diagnosis Project. That's where doctors sign on and they look at difficult cases and they try to determine the diagnosis. They looked at cases solved by at least 20 physicians. So this is not you going to your doctor. This is you going to human beings versus you going to software. And in this case, there had to be at least 20 physicians participating. What they found was the physicians are far more accurate. The physicians listed the correct diagnosis first 72% of the time. The symptom checker, 34% of the time. They put it in their top three diagnoses 84% of the time. Symptom checker, 51%. They listed the correct diagnosis first for 79% of the high acuity cases, whereas the symptom checkers, 24% of the high acuity cases. So if you are really need to get to the emergency room right away, a symptom checker is about a third as accurate as 20 doctors online, for what it's worth. He said, Mehrotra, he said, yeah, I didn't expect, I knew the physicians would perform better. What we got to do is we got to make the symptom checkers better. So again, round one goes to the physicians, but this is not the scenario where you would go see your doctor and ask a question. This is a scenario where you put it up to a group of doctors, and that's not real life medicine. Mm-hmm. On the other hand, the nice thing about it is if you go to a doctor and the doctor may miss the diagnosis the first time, if you go back to the doctor, they're going to change their mind because they missed the first time. If you go back to a symptom checker, it's going to run the same algorithm and get the same thing. So especially if we for some reason didn't get it right the first time, humans are more self-correcting right now than symptom checkers are. You ever use one of those, Rick?
Nope.
I've Googled some symptoms sometimes. I mean, that's something that medical students often do, is they'll just Google all the symptoms rather than look it up in a textbook. And it is one way to get some additional diagnosis from it.
Yeah. You know, I've been around medicine all my life, right? So I've got Google and, you know, sitting on the living room, you know, sitting on the couch. So, you know, no reason. I just say, hey, I got these symptoms. What do you think? And I get the answer. And that's fine. So I never search these online checkers. Now, I will say one thing. What we're seeing a trend in technology is so if you think about it, it's a phased approach, right? You go from no data or written data, right, to electronic data that's formatted, to electronic data that's searchable, to electronic data that's searchable with the natural spoken language, right? So we're somewhere between getting the data electronic and making it somewhat searchable, right? It's only a matter of time before we get the data in, we get it searchable, and then we use natural language to search it. Once you have a natural language search capability, you're going to see those accuracy checkers go up much higher than the physicians.
So what you're saying is right now,
Skynet's coming.
Okay, so for instance, for Google Maps, I can just say I want to go to Pennsylvania.
Well, because when you say I want to go to Pennsylvania, right now, Pennsylvania is not really, even though it is a spoken language, it's a very proper noun. Mm-hmm. And so I can find proper nouns on the web pretty easy. I can find the answers to things, you know, that are about nouns pretty easy. It's very difficult when you start adding symptoms as more of a thing, right? Or it's more
I feel queasy.
Yeah, it's more. It has some verb in there, right? Yeah. It has some verb, and then of course there's always some adjectives in there and adverbs, and you know it gets really gray and messy, right? And so the idea is how do you take a search and throw an adjective or an adverb in there and then change the severity of or the priority of that search term, right? So maybe that one they're putting emphasis on it, so maybe you give it a higher priority in the search. You're seeing that coming. I mean, and you're funny you mentioned this because 2 weeks ago, 3 weeks ago when I was at Splunk, Splunk is a big data tool. That's what it does. It data mines. And there are now bolt-ons for that product that do natural language searches. So now I can search my
data. So when you say
data.
Natural language searches, you mean I can ask that a question.
Please tell me how many times Tony Weaver has logged into his computer today? Boom, I get the results. Yes, I'm Big Brother. Tony.
You know, I don't like the way this went. It's sort of just all I'm saying a really nasty turn.
All I'm saying is we're getting to the point where we're getting better at natural language searches, right? So, I mean, how many times when a real, like, hardcore IT guy, gal, person would have searched the internet from day one, we put in keywords, right? So we say, I want to know everything about water and bottled and, you know, Clarity, right? As to where really what we need to get to where most the average non-IT person might say, how clear is my bottle of water? We got to get the searches more in tune with that as opposed to the keyword search.
Gotcha. So the symptom checkers are still you
keyword
type
based.
In.
Yeah, they're keyword based.
Yeah.
And so you got to get them to where they go natural language, and that way the whatever the person's saying in the natural language gets in, defines the search.
But now, let me ask you, because you just went to Splunk. I'll have a patient come in, and they'll start off by saying, you know, I just feel really queer. I don't know what it is. I just feel queer. And that's an Eastern Kentucky word if you're from out of the region. But it's an uncomfortable feeling. It's a smothersome queerness.
Something like that. If you looked at Eastern Kentucky language versus English language in general, there's 50, 100 differences?
Yeah.
Pretty easy to program, don't you think?
So you could go into this computer. So at some point, you say, I have a smothersome queerness, and the computer would say, okay, that means that you have an uncomfortable feeling of being short of breath.
Correct.
And it would go and search that.
Absolutely.
And the other thing is, though, I'll say, okay, well, you know, maybe you do have a smothersome queerness, but really the problem is that you're upset because your dog died. And I can discount some things. This is an important symptom.
But then now think about it. So now I track that to my Fitbit watch or my tracker. So now not only am I asking about my situation, but I'm also correlating my symptoms to my last 72 days of data stored in the online system. So now I see my heart rate's up now for some reason. I see that I'm not sleeping well. All of a sudden, there's some piece of data that I can now correlate to my symptom, and now all of a sudden, my natural language search, coupled with my real live data, I got the makings of a pretty good diagnosis there.
Okay, what you're saying is your computer is going to know you better than I as a doctor would
if
know
you. If
you
let it.
Yeah, because it will have the data from the last week, all I have is what you tell me.
Well, and the other thing, too, is let's be honest, Tony. How many times have you questioned what your patient actually told you? So, right. I mean, the thing is, my Fitbit, I don't like it because it doesn't lie. It tells me when I don't walk enough it tells me that. And so it doesn't really tell untruths. How many times have somebody come in and told you they didn't smoke, but you could smell it on them?
Yeah.
I'm saying it eliminates some of those factors. Couple that with a natural language search. Couple that. I mean, what you see, eventually technology will be able to do a very good job of this.
Shelley, do you think, honestly, do you think that people would put up with such a thing as that?
They're not going to have a choice.
What do you mean?
Well, I'm just saying, I mean, at some point your data is going online. At some point the Fitbit trend is only getting more. Right? I mean, I don't think
people are going to go off grid.
They're
going to say,
yeah,
oh, that's enough of that.
There'll be a small percentage.
You remember
percentage?
That scene in Apollo 13 when they all yanked off their sensors and said, you're not getting our data anymore.
Great. They still had their data. They were in the. They had to talk to the people. I mean,
they did, but at that point there was a human interaction.
I'm
just curious.
There's going to be a small population, but it's coming. It's coming. Skynet's here.
Rick? Shelley?
Yeah. I don't like it.
I don't know. I am just curmudgeonly enough that I might pull off my wires. First of all, you notice I have no Fitbit anywhere near me.
Guess how well your natural language search will work. Not as good as everybody else's.
And, you know, honestly, I'm okay with that.
Well, good. We'll misdiagnose you then. Good luck getting in with a real doctor.
Oh, that's true. They won't be around, will they?
Yeah.
They're
going to be scarce. I mean, or they're going to be online, or they're going to be through a video connection.
This terrifying view of the future is brought to you by Health Matters. Why don't I take a break now and recover? Because we're going to come back with our third and final fractional portion. You're listening to Health Matters on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. The Northeast AHEC connects students to careers, professionals to communities, and communities to better health. The Northeast AHEC strives to improve the supply and distribution of healthcare professionals through the community and academic educational partnerships. More information is available online at neahec.org.
Hello and welcome back. This is the third and final fractional portion of Health Matters. I'm Rick Phillips.
I'm Dr. Tony Weaver. And this show, again, we apologize if anyone was offended. That's the name of the show.
How could you get offended?
Well, because you've gone on about how computers are going to take over the world and nobody's going to be
doing anything
about it.
I never said they were going to take over the world. They're just going to take your job.
And
I can see how you would be offended.
I am high-end service industry, but I will concede that you are right. Pretty much any algorithm I use, you know, I said, okay, well, all right, if you have a bothersome
your algorithm has three or four boxes.
Yeah, and essentially a computer could imitate what I do. The only thing is I do care about my patients. And I sense when things are not going right or when they don't trust me or things like that. And that's
you're saying a computer's hairs on the back of a computer's neck won't stand up?
I think a computer can recommend stuff. Let me just tell you, when I do a search, as you know, all these things show up on the side. The computer really has no idea. Absolutely no idea what might tempt me. I mean, we've had everything from plumbing supplies to vacation property in Washington State.
Well, that tells me you've been looking at plumbing supplies,
right.
And you've been thinking about Washington State as a vacation spot.
That's correct, but it basically after
I pretty accurate, I think.
After I book my flight, then the computer decides, oh, you probably want to fly to Washington State all the time.
No, it's showing you that you could have paid less.
Thank you, computer. Shelley, I'm sorry. With us also to kind of stand in the middle and at least buff for the two of us from the University of Kentucky Physician Assistant Studies Program, Assistant Professor Shelley Irving. Hi, Shelley.
Hello.
Our sponsor for the final time, Copays for Expensive Medicines, wrong for your healthcare costs, wrong for America. And again, I want to make sure our radio fans understand this. A Wall Street Journal, October 11th, says, and I am reading directly from the Wall Street Journal, spending on pharmaceuticals is driving much of the insurance cost increase. Prescription drug costs expected to rise 7% in 2017. Specialty drugs treating conditions such as cancer, multiple sclerosis, and rheumatoid arthritis are going to surge 16.8% in 2017. And when you've got drug prices going up by 16.8% and drug companies fine-tuning their ability to access your insurance dollars, you have trouble. Now, the way they do this is they do something called copay assistance. Look, we know that you have to pay cash for our expensive drug. Let us do that for you. And that way, we will get more people on our expensive drug. We will access the insurance part of the payment, which dwarfs the copay. The copay is a nuisance to try to keep you from overutilizing these expensive drugs and to move you toward cheaper drugs. If I can eliminate your copay, I can get you on the expensive drugs, and I can access your insurance dollars and your neighbor's insurance dollars collectively to pay for my drug. And that's how I can sell a drug that costs $100,000 a year. Is by using these techniques. So again, the Annals of Internal Medicine, October 11th, says this diminishes price pressure. It means that prices no longer matter to the consumer. It undermines low-cost insurance company insurance plans because they are built on the fact that they are set up to encourage lower utilization, and you are circumventing that. They reduce negotiating leverage for insurers. Insurers can't raise the copay to keep you from taking an unnecessarily expensive medicine because the drug company simply will pay the copay and get you back to where you were before with a cheaper medicine. So, and they said, what should policymakers do? Now, let me just say, for our Health Matters Radio fans, if you get copay assistance, it makes perfect sense for you to do it. I am not in any way trying to tell you not to take advantage of something that is perfectly legal at this point. But from a policy standpoint, this, in fact, is going to wreck all of our insurance. Something needs to be done. It's unlikely that anything will be done, and we will watch the Affordable Care Act fall apart because it is right now, from a cost standpoint, unsustainable. That is, unfortunately, our sponsor, Copays for Expensive Medicine. Now, we're trying. Before Rick derailed us last time with all this technology stuff.
Did you or did you not ask me a question?
We had a perfectly good, and I will never do that again. That's pretty clearly the wrong way to run this show. But we want to talk about some other health issues. And you got to realize, I mean, Rick went to Splunkfest. He has looked in at big data, and he comes back, and I just lay this big data softball right there in front of him and say, well, you know, how could a machine possibly manage all the data needed to make a diagnosis? And Rick says, oh, ho, I have just spent days learning exactly how that happens, and he lays it out for us, and it frankly shocked and terrified me.
Well, I mean, sorry.
Yeah.
It's not like I haven't went and talked to my doctor and been shocked and terrified.
Okay. So you got us back. I hope you feel good about that. That's fine. AMA Clinical Guidelines Synopsis. This was the AMA Journal October 4th, and this was about the management of acne. And this will lead somewhere, I promise. We're not big acne managers here on Health Matters, but I want you to understand. The first major recommendation of this guideline in the October issue of the AMA Journal, it says, topical retinoids are the fundamental component of topical acne therapy. They're recommended as therapy for various types of acne in people with either mixed or primary inflammatory acne. That is, they are the cornerstone. We talked about how these anti-inflammatory nasal sprays is how you start with allergies, not the Claritin Clear, but a nose spray. In the same way, this is where you start. Benzoyl peroxide, it's over-the-counter. It's in a whole bunch of things. It is effective, but the fundamental component is these topical retinoids. The problem was the topical retinoids were, one, expensive, which they still are, and two, they were prescription only. So that sets us up. This came from the medical letter September 26. Differin gel 0.1%. This is a formulation of adapalene. It is a retinoid. Again, the main component of how you treat acne. It will be available over-the-counter soon. It's been FDA approved to go over-the-counter in people greater than 12 years old, the first retinoid, topical retinoid, to be approved for sale over-the-counter. Now, what they do, they have anti-inflammatory effects. It's not clear whether one is of one of this medicine class is better than the other, and they can be used alone or they can be used with benzoyl peroxide or with antibiotics and other things. They dry your skin out, something fierce. You have to be very careful about getting sunburned. You can't use them over cuts, abrasions, and things like that because they dry out and it will be very difficult to heal. It will be available in a 1% gel, a cream and a lotion, and in a 1/10% gel and a 3/10% gel. The price, the generic prescription was available for $157 a tube. the brand name $580 a tube for your acne medicine. We're not sure what the over-the-counter is going to be, but brand name, prescription strength Differin, the same stuff, is currently $580 a tube. So if you are a rich person with acne, good news for you.
What about pregnant women?
Well, you know, it's an interesting question. The FDA acknowledges that it's not been studied. It just simply hasn't been studied. There is no evidence that it causes harm in pregnant. Now, I will tell you, if you take this stuff by mouth, I don't mean squirt the tube down your mouth. I mean take a pill of a retinoid, and you're pregnant. That will cause birth defects in the baby just about every time. The stuff you put on your skin, no evidence of it, but really they haven't studied it very much. My gut feeling is probably safe, and that's why it's going over the counter, and the FDA feels the same, but not proven to be safe. And so depending on your level of alarm, you may or may not decide to use this cream while you're pregnant. You got any information on that? Any thoughts on that other than what I said?
No, that's all I could find, too, was the category C, which just means that they haven't studied it in humans.
So it would be tough to take a cream that would have that, to put a cream on your face that would have an effect on your baby, but I guess not impossible. So there is a little bit of that. I think if I were pregnant, hopefully that would have an effect on the acne a little bit, and you might be able to get by with not using it for a while. Don't really know. Any rate, again, for rich people with acne, we've got good news, and the Differin will be out soon. We don't have a date of launch, but keep an eye out for that. I will say it is the kind of product you need to treat your acne. Benzoyl peroxide, great stuff, cheap, but this is substantially better than that. Now, this one is for Rick. Just wanted you to be aware of this, Rick. The AMA Internal, the AMA Journal of Internal Medicine, in September reported on animal and plant protein intake and all-cause mortality. What they found was, if you eat a lot of animal protein, if you eat a lot of meat, you have a higher risk of heart disease, higher plant protein intake, lower risk of heart disease, and also a lower all-cause mortality. So vegetarians appear to have lower all-cause mortality. A lot of cardiologists have said, look, if you want to live a long time, you should become a vegetarian.
So Tony, in my case, you know, you may be correct in the most technical sense, but I started out like 62 pounds ago, and I've taken enough weight off to where I think that I've compensated for that now. So now I've found other risk factors that I could lower to make up for the difference.
So you're saying,
I'm okay.
Yeah. So you're saying, well, let's be a healthy meat eater.
Well, no, I'm saying let's don't be an overweight meat eater, because then you know.
All right.
So yeah, I've lowered my rate to where now it's back to where I can offset this thing. So I'm not too worried.
I think if it weren't for pizza, I could be a vegetarian.
I like pizza. Something tells me there is another food somewhere somehow that would drive you to violate your vegetarian status.
You know, Shelley.
Yeah.
I'm tired of talking to Rick.
So because you know I'm right.
Because you think that, I don't know that you can offset
could
it,
you,
though.
Could you really, like, have a cookout at your house and not eat anything on the grill?
Yeah, that's
weird.
You can
grill vegetables.
You can grill vegetables, but he's right. I mean, it would be tough to invite people over. We already invite people over. We don't serve beer at our house. We just don't. That's not, if you bring it, that's fine, but we're not going to serve beer at our house. So you imagine, hey, let's have a party at our house. There'll be no beer and there'll be no meat.
It won't be much to clean up. On the positive side, it won't take long to clean up after that party.
And I doubt there'll be any fights, except everybody just get disgruntled and go home. But
nor would you even have to vacuum the carpet.
Yeah, I mean, broccoli doesn't leave a...
Well, nobody's going to track anything in.
That's true. They're probably not going to get out of their car. But does that sound like a... I mean, let's face it. Super Bowl party at my house, lemonade, and...
maybe the game. Although, yeah, they don't know what kind of cable you got.
That's true. We got rooftop. This would be probably the worst party in history. I mean, people would be swarming away from it. But again, Shelley, you eat meat.
Yes.
Are you a...
Watch out, he'll disown you.
No. I'm not. This is... but you favor chicken? My wife, by the way, she eats chicken. She will rarely eat beef, but she is very much a chicken person. So this Purdue thing was pretty big for her.
Yeah. I eat mostly chicken and fish.
Okay. Because again, those are the healthier meats. Rick and I, meanwhile, Rick, you worked at a steak place when you were young.
Absolutely. First job ever.
And I don't think you've ever gotten over an inordinate love of steak.
Yeah, there's not. It's very difficult for me to pass up on any ribeye I see that's cooked.
Yeah.
Or even partially cooked.
Well, this is the interesting part. This was October 7th, Journal of Human Nutrition and Dietetics. This is the official journal of the British Dietetic Association. They did an analysis of all the studies that looked at vegetarian, pesco-vegetarians who eat fish and vegetables, non-vegetarians, and they looked at the relative risk of cancer. And, Rick, you'll be very pleased to know, 9 studies, over 500,000 people, and 3,000 cases of breast cancer, 4,000 cases of colorectal cancer, 1,900 cases of prostate cancer. But there was none of these analyses showed a significant association of a vegetarian diet and a lower risk of breast, colorectal, or prostate cancer compared to non-vegetarian. So it is true. The first thing we said was it appears to lower your risk of heart disease. It appears to lower your risk of all cause mortality. It does not. Being a vegetarian does not appear to lower your risk of these common cancers.
So bacon doesn't cause cancer.
You know, it's
I like her. This one's good. I like this one, Tony.
But honestly, the problem is, you know, they do mention that the processed meats, and I think bacon's going to come down as a processed meat. The processed meats do, as you know, I mean, those do appear to have a higher risk. So when you're talking about stepping into a Slim Jim, when you're talking about some of those luncheon meats and so forth, if they are fixed so that they don't spoil after 7 days in the sun, those, in fact, do seem to have a slightly higher risk of cancer. But meat alone, just simply meat alone doesn't, which I felt like that was relatively a good thing.
I'll leave that up to you. You're the doctor. I don't have the natural search ability right now.
Aw.
Soon enough, though.
Could you ask the cloud?
Not yet. Not yet, but give me time.
Okay. Fair enough. Do I have time for one more, Rick, or do we have one more? Okay. Let me just – I'll just blast through this real quickly. I think it's an important thing. This is about people, older people with dementia, and we always run into this problem where, as a part of the dementia, they have difficulty in eating. The question is, do you put a tube in to help them eat? Do you feed them through a tube? We used to put the tube down the nose. It was very uncomfortable. Nobody liked that. We have now modern tubes that you can insert directly into the stomach. They're underneath the clothes. You don't see them. They seem to be better, but, in fact, they are still the guidelines from geriatrics and nutrition societies do not recommend artificial nutrition, tube feedings, if a person has severe dementia and stops eating. Limited periods of time if you think you can fix something, but in general, just because somebody stops eating. And Shelley, how many times have you heard, well, we can't let them starve?
A thousand.
Yeah. This study was 184 demented, malnourished patients, average age 82. They had a tube put in 54 of them. The others didn't. And the group that had the tube feeding lived half as long as the ones who didn't. That is, tube feeding was associated with only half the life expectancy. You cannot feed a demented patient into a longer lifespan using a tube. We at Health Matters do not recommend using tubes for your loved one who has a severe dementia, and that's the reason they stop eating. Rick, can you get us off the air, please?
Sure can. Special thanks to Larry the Engineer and Darlene at the Kennedy Space Center. You guys certainly deserve it. Our Moorhead State Public Radio producer, Brian Courtney, and Eric Bilbrey, who wrote our Health Matters theme song, and to you, our loyal radio fans. Remember to show your support for Health Matters by visiting our digital empire. To listen to the show, go to WMKY.org or just visit us on Facebook. Do a search for HM Radio Show.
For our radio crew and the supportive folks at the Northeast AHEC, thanks for listening to our show. And remember,
Health Matters is a once-a-day prescription acne radio show. It has been proven safe and effective in listeners 12 years of age and older.
Health Matters is a retinoid radio show that works under the skin to unclog pores, clear the acne you have now, and help prevent future breakouts. It is very effective because it is strong enough to treat the most challenging acne, yet sensitive on your skin.
The most commonly reported side effects in patients listening to Health Matters were dry skin, skin discomfort, itching, and sunburn. Health Matters listeners should minimize exposure to sunlight, including sun lamps, while listening to our show. It is, if exposure cannot be avoided, sunscreen products and protective apparel should be used.
Weather extremes such as wind or cold may be irritating to our listeners. Oh, and by the way, there have been no adequate and well-controlled studies of health matters in pregnant women, but there is no specific evidence that health matters causes birth defects in humans. Some other retinoid radio shows have been shown to cause birth defects.
Avoid contact of health matters with the eyes, lips, angles of the nose, and mucous membranes. Do not use health matters on cuts, abrasions, or sunburned skin. As with other retinoid radio shows, waxing the skin should be avoided after listening to our show and always.
No post-health matters waxing. Please, whatever you do, do not take this stuff lying down. Get out this week, make a healthy change in your life, and tune in next week for more news from the exciting world of reading medical journals on Morehead State Public Radio.
Support for Health Matters on MSPR comes from the Northeast Kentucky Area Health Education Center, located at the St. Clair Regional Medical Center in Morehead. Additional information on the Northeast AHEC is available online at neahec.org.